House Transportation will come to order. Welcome, everybody. Thank you for coming in and spending your Friday afternoon with me. I'm going to the work session on House Bill 2396 is going to have to get carried over to Monday because we don't have the fiscal paperwork on that one. So if you're waiting for that one, we're not getting there today. So. And then with that, I'm going to go ahead, since I have a couple of legislators here, open the public hearing on House Bill 2417. And Patrick.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. This measure, House Bill 2417, requires that ODOT notify a road authority at least 60 days prior to closing a railroad highway grade crossing. It provides exception in cases involving a natural disaster or other emergency that compromises health and safety, as determined by the department.
Thank you. Representative Gelzer and Senator Morris.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sarah Gelser, and I am the representative of House District 16, which includes Corvallis and Philomath. Last summer, around June, my constituent Casey Denson contacted me. He owns a great business called Denson's Feed and Seed Store in Corvallis. It has been a thriving business in our community for decades, and in fact, it has operated in continuous operation at its current location since the 1940s. He notified me that ODOT had issued a final order to close the railroad crossing near his business entrance for safety reasons. As far as he knew, there had not been any traffic safety concerns at this crossing. And in my follow-up in requesting the data, I learned that there had not been an injury accident at that crossing in my lifetime. And as you know, I am very old. The closure would have greatly impacted his business, particularly the ability for delivery trucks to enter and exit his business. Mr. Denson expressed his fear to me that this would cause him to lose his business, that the business would have to close, and that he had not been notified earlier about the decision. Further, he did not feel that he had adequate opportunity to provide input to ODOT about potential community impacts that a closure may have. I contacted the Oregon Department of Transportation to request information about their decision to close the railroad crossing. They were very gracious in response, and an ODOT representative actually came out, and we drove around and looked at all of their many rail crossings right in that area, and I was appreciative of that. In the meantime, the city agreed to hold a public hearing, at which time the city council voted unanimously to oppose the closure, because the closure of this particular crossing also would have significantly disrupted not just business traffic, but residential traffic right near the core of Corvallis. Even though cities have no authority over closure decisions and their vote was not binding on ODOT, ODOT in subsequent conversations with the city came to a different solution and decided to forego the closure. House Bill 2417 is a simple bill that would allow for these public hearings and input to take place before business owners and residents see a piece of paper that has the ominous words proposed final order on it. Governing authorities, local city councils or county commissioners, as the case may be, local citizens, business owners should have the opportunity to have input before they feel like the final decision is made. Of course, there is a strong exception in the bill in the cases where there are immediate threats to traffic safety. I appreciate your holding a hearing on this bill, and I do apologize that I have to leave, but I am chairing the Education Committee next door, and we are in work session, so I need to scoot back there after we hear from Senator Morse.
Thank you.
Senator. Well, thank you, Madam Chair and colleagues. For the record, Frank Morse, and I represent parts of Linn and Benton counties, and Representative Gelzer is my representative, and I'm honored to appear at the table today with her on this issue. It's a very simple bill, and it does not diminish the authority of ODOT in any way, shape, or form. But what it does is it puts in place hopefully a process where once the decision is made or indicated within the department, the rail division, that a closure must occur, that a process be undertaken that engages the public. And I would suggest to you that in kind of looking at this in the broader sense, authority is a very treasured fact of government. But when authority does not have due process, what is the result? It's a diminishment of trust in government. And it builds those walls of cynicism. And what we're asking you to do is to create a due process, not diminish the authority, but due process, where the public can be heard, other ideas introduced from the committee's or community's perspective to find solutions to a problem before it is just delivered from on high. So, Madam Chair, colleagues, I would ask your consideration for this bill and believe that it is indeed is in the public's interest to create a process.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel? I don't see any. Must have done a good job. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have Patricia Daniels. Welcome.
Good afternoon. I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for the opportunity to provide testimony on this issue. I've provided written remarks for the record and would simply like to highlight briefly a few key points from that testimony. My name is Patricia Daniels, and I'm a member of the Corvallis City Council. More specifically, I represent the area of the city that was to be affected by two recent rail crossing proposals. The abrupt notice to the city and affected business and property owners without any public hearing was problematic for two reasons. First, and as you've already heard, it caused significant hardship for several local businesses, most notably a local family-owned agricultural supply operation that has been in business at its present location next to the railroad track for over six decades. The business owner felt obliged to engage an attorney to defend his interests as he understandably saw the survival of the business at stake. Additionally, his need to continually monitor the process and engage with various parties towards a resolution created a further hardship as it created a serious distraction of his time and resources from the daily operations of the business, all at an extremely busy season. Second, the threatened rail crossing proposal appears to have occurred in an informational vacuum at ODOT. Specifically, the streets proposed to be closed were two of a very limited number of north-south streets through the center of town. As many of you are no doubt aware, Oregon State University occupies a very large area right in the middle of Corvallis, and so north-south connectivity is a real challenge. The ODOT Rail Division proposal would have eliminated through traffic across a distance of nine blocks, not just two. These two streets proposed to be blocked are essential connecting elements of the Corvallis Transportation Plan, which was required by and approved by ODOT. Evidently, the Rail Division was unaware of this mandate by its own organization when the proposal was made. Although the situation was subsequently resolved through the good work by our city staff and ODOT Rail Division, I just want to point out that these matters would have become known to the Rail Division if they'd only held a public hearing before the proposal was formally issued. So, therefore, I respectfully request that you approve a proposed amendment requiring ODOT Rail to hold the public hearing that would inform us locally of their intent prior to any proposed rail crossing closure. Having ODOT Rail hold the hearing instead of the local government would allow them to both provide and receive all of the information directly rather than introducing an additional level of bureaucracy where they tell us to hold the hearing, and we hold the hearing, and then we take the hearing stuff and send it back to them. So that concludes my testimony. Again, I'd like to thank you very much for your time and attention to this matter.
Thank you. Questions from members?
Thank you.
I don't see any. Thank you. Okay, I have Terry Finn, Cindy Roberts, and David Anser. I assume this panel is okay.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Terry Finn, representing Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway. And I'm here to speak gently against House Bill 2417. From the railroad perspective, safety is our utmost concern. BNSF Railway has a special group in the company that does nothing but go around the country seeking closure of dangerous crossings. And I'm not involved, or I have no direct knowledge of anything of the Corvallis crossing, and I'm not even suggesting that that was necessarily horribly dangerous or anything else. I'm saying that from the railroad's perspective and a liability concern and a human cost concern, we would like to see more and more at-grade rail crossings closed because they have proliferated exponentially over the last 50 years, greatly increased. And if you know anything about railroading, or if you ever hope to run, say, high-speed rail or passenger trains, you would know that you would have to seal off virtually every crossing with a very sophisticated safety device gate, or close it altogether before you could really run passenger rail in a sealed corridor like it should run. It seems the 60-day addition and this bill seems unnecessary to us. I'm not largely experienced with the Oregon process, but I'm told that there have been generally very few disagreements over closure issues in the last years. I've been involved in a couple of myself already, and they have they've only been determined one way or the other after a very, very lengthy meeting and public comment period. So I think that this you know, is an unnecessary redundancy in process. And I also would like to just respectfully remind the committee that it's the railroad companies that fund ODOT and its administration of the crossing or the closure program. Adding extra time for this process would add to ODOT's costs and ultimately to our costs as well. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we'll go ahead and then if there are questions.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cindy Robert, and I represent Union Pacific Railroad. Union Pacific is proud to be doing business in Oregon. We have over 1,000 miles of track. We employ over 1,600 Oregonians, and we have a payroll in the state of over $104 million. Since 2003, we've invested $330 million upgrading our track. You can tell I'm a little under the weather today. I apologize, Madam Chair. But we don't just do business here. We also are very involved in the communities, from United Way of Lane County to the World Forestry Center, from the Klamath Lake Regional Housing Center to Salem's Pinnacle Theater. Our Union Pacific Foundation is a contributor to the communities of our state. Our commitment to Oregon, its communities, and the safety of its citizens is why this issue of rail crossing closures is so critical to us. I provided you with information on both the bills, and I was hoping to speak on them collectively, although the other hearing is not open. So I will simply highlight two reasons why we have concerns over this issue being brought up here. First of all, on 2417, you're talking about requiring a city or county road authority to be given 60 days notice. And thus far, with the exception of the Corvallis crossing, which was resolved well, we don't know of any problems and why this extension time should occur. You usually do not have any problems when it comes to closure. There's an ODOT, city, county, and rail agreement going into it, and we only close those that we've all agreed are the right thing to do. This bill would mandate an unnecessarily delay, and as Mr. Finn pointed out, is really going to cause problems as we move towards high-speed rail in all these different areas. The other thing I wanted to point out, and this way you won't have to call me up again, is that the Department of Transportation is following the rules of the Federal Highway Administration. They have a priority system when it comes to railroad crossings closures. They have very stringent guidelines for what we're supposed to do, and the number one priority is to close an unneeded or redundant crossing. Not to talk about signalization, not to talk about different ways to handle the problem, but to close it. And that's UP's number one priority, is to close those that we don't need and help with the safety of the citizens of Oregon. So we urge you to vote no on 2417, and even though it's not open, also on 3248. And again, we thank you for your continued public support.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is David Anser. I'm with the Director of Finance and Accounting for Portland and Western Railroad. Portland Western is a regional railroad here in Oregon. We have about 520 miles of track. We're extend from Astoria down to Eugene and throughout the Willamette Valley. We have 200 employees. We serve about 150 industrial customers in the area, and we handle about 75 to 100,000 carloads. PNW's number one priority is safety, as mentioned with the other railroads. We've gone 3 years injury-free for our employees. We feel that that's a big commitment to our safety. We are heavily involved with Operation Lifesaver, which is an organization promoting the safety of rail crossings. ODOT Rail places as much emphasis on safety as the PNW does, and we're lucky to have their partnership with ODOT Rail. We applaud ODOT Rail's leadership in improving the safety of Oregon's rail system, and these closures are extremely helpful for our system and increases the safety of the public. PNW supports in retaining ODOT's ability to manage the highway grade crossings as they deem most appropriate, and they have a tremendous record of improving safety at these grade crossings, and let's see here. And it's focused on the administration of, it would not be possible to be focused on the administration of an ill-conceived regulatory process being prescribed by these two bills. Neither one of these bills makes the management of railroad crossings any safer. And then Terry pointed out that the expenses related to ODOT Rail is funded by the railroads of the state, and it is a fee that we pay to ODOT, and that fee will increase if there's administration burden placed upon ODOT, then it'll increase our cost, which we cannot do, especially in this economic environment where we've had to lay off 10% of our workforce. The current system has served our communities, public service, and the state, as well as our industry, and we would encourage the committee not to attempt to fix a process that isn't broken. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Shoffler.
Well, I certainly would never, thank you, Madam Chair, I certainly would never deny the railroad the ability to shut something down that had posed a clear and imminent immediate threat. I wouldn't do that. I don't want to do that. And I believe this system is working well for you guys in ODOT, but I don't think it's working well for everybody. Otherwise, my friends and colleagues wouldn't have been here testifying. So I guess, and then my experience as a legislator and a public servant is sometimes when people first hear about something, they overreact because they don't have all the facts. If you just slap something on them without some kind of public notification, then you really get a knee-jerk reaction. And I wish we, and maybe it's just our lack of giving clear direction to the Department of Transportation to do a little more public notification and education. And I know they don't have any money. Like everybody else, that costs money, takes time. But I can't believe that we couldn't work something out here to where it just doesn't show up one day that these crossings are closed. And I don't think that's your intention or your desire to surprise anyone. But I clearly people are concerned and worried and upset about some of these closings. And I don't know if these vehicles are the way, Madam Chair, but I think something needs to be done to at least notify and educate people why we're doing it. Because I don't want my wife and daughter going across a dangerous railroad crossing, and I don't think Senator Morris or Representative Gelser do either. But I'm just venting my thoughts, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you.
very unusual practice.
Madam Chair, if I might, Representative Shopwood, you will hear when you listen to Kelly Teller's testimony that there is already a process that's put into place for notification. And like I said, we think it works very well. In 10 years, we've never had a problem with a crossing not getting the notification that people wanted it to get. Secondly, I think it's important to note that in the case of the Corvallis crossing, it was handled and ended well. Was there a process that could be changed so that there was notification in advance? Sure. But by changing the situation for that one dilemma, we're changing a lot of different codes and ordinances and behaviors that probably don't need to be changed. So I was happy that that one was resolved well, and I look forward to hearing from Kelly on the process they already have, but I think it works well everywhere else.
Ma'am, that brings up a question then, if I may. Who was included in that process, and how did that work out, and exactly why did that need to be closed? Just so I know what's going on.
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, I think that you'll find that Kelly has the details on who was notified and who has to be notified in the Corvallis. None of us are that rail, okay. So I'm not sure on that specific process, so I'd hate to answer it. But I do know that cities and counties help us to do the notification that's required.
And just for the record, Madam Chair, I love to ride on the train. I love the train. You work for CNW, right?
PNW, Portland Western.
No, didn't. Were you the one that used to work for Chicago Northwestern?
No.
We had a railroad guy in here that worked for us. Forgive me. Thank you.
Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since I have three railroad companies up here, have you ever had an instance like this in any of your closures that you've dealt with where you weren't able to, where the process started to close a crossing and where it affected a business and you didn't go in and change things?
I don't know that I have a specific answer for you, Representative Widener, but there seems to be, to me, always a little bit of a tension in many crossing closures between what local government or what local residents perceive as their interest and what perhaps a state body, for instance, might see as a broader interest. And I think that many closures are ripe with some degree of contention, but most that I've seen, and that includes in Washington as well as Oregon, are usually settled with lots of talk and sometimes mitigation about how another, say, crossing will be kept open or improved to some extent. I've even seen examples, for instance, where the state might step in and actually pay for a grade separation or be a major funder of a grade separation, which is, from the railroad's perspective, the best of all safety improvements. But at the same time have local residents or sometimes the local government argue that a nearby crossing ought to be kept open, and that grade crossing, therefore, to me, defeating the interest. So I think that most of them are settled fairly amicably and with lots of talk. I mean, there's no diminishment of discussion.
Madam Chair, Representative, I have a direct answer to that question. UPA has not gone to hearing on a matter concerning the closure, grade separation, signalization, or other alteration of crossing in over 10 years in Oregon, which we believe shows how well the current system works.
Representative Weiner, Madam Chair, I'm not aware of anything of any of the crossings that we've had to go to hearing over. But we have worked everything out between the road authority and the city. And in recent example is we're doing a big project down in Albany, and we've been working with the city, and we're just about there on closing certain crossings and keeping certain ones open and signalizing others, along with ODOT Rail and all the stakeholders.
And if I may vent, like Representative Schaffler, I have never heard of an instance till this one at one location, and it was resolved too. So I don't know if we need any legislation. But I'm just venting. I don't do that
good.
Very often.
No.
Equal opportunity. So, yeah, Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The hearing that's proposed is
prior to the final order, is there a hearing that's allowed after the order if someone's unhappy with it? Is there an appeal process already in the statute? I'm just trying to get at when folks that are unhappy with the action have the opportunity to be heard.
Look at him.
And I was going to say that Kelly probably is the best person to answer that question, if you, unless they have something burning.
I've had anyone complain, so I'm not sure how that process works.
And she'll be up next.
Yeah.
And Representative Shuffler.
You know, if the railroad wants to close the crossing down, I want you to close the crossing because you have a good reason to close it. I'm not against that. I think we just need to... Okay, it works well for you guys and the stakeholders, and I believe you, but clearly there's people that don't feel like they've been given adequate notification. That's all I think really people need, and if there's a reason to close that crossing down, I'll be the first one to agree with you, and you should be allowed to close it. It's just people want to know that. I don't think that's asking too much, and they want to know more than the existing process. People aren't happy with lack of notification, according to some, and I think that's easily satisfied. And I don't know if it's these bills or if it's better direction to ODOT, but clearly people are unsatisfied with what's going on, some good people. And I think that's easy to solve, but I would never deny you the ability to close a crossing because you know how to run a railroad and I don't. There you go. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Shoffler, I appreciate what you're saying. I think the thing that's important is to realize that as we ask for more notification, when is it enough? Because notification does currently happen. And so someone wants some more, and in an ideal world, we'd
I know the answer to that,
be able to do that.
If I may?
Yeah. Yes, please.
It's when I'm happy.
I like that. You know I agree with that, Representative.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your input. And Kelly Taylor.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Taylor. I'm the administrator of the Rail Division, and I appreciate the opportunity to add some clarification, add some information to the discussion that you've been having. What I'd like to do is talk both about the current process and what is in there, and also, since there's been so much specific information about this particular case, I'd like to also talk about some information that I don't think has been brought up yet that I'd like to share with you. So, and I think it'll help illuminate the conversation and the discussion. Let's talk about the current process. When either we or a railroad or a state, or excuse me, a local agency, want to do something at a crossing, believe some action is necessary, it comes through us. We're the ones that regulate all crossings, no matter whether it's construction of a new, change of an existing, close, whatever. When we issue, and there's, you know, there's an application that comes into us or there's conversation that happens, what we issue is called a proposed final order. It's not a final order. That's the words on it, but it's a proposed order. And it is given in writing to both the road authorities affected and the railroad. And they're given time inside. It outlines what's being proposed, not what's been decided, what's being proposed, what's been applied for, what's being considered. And it outlines what would happen and then who'd be responsible for doing what, whether it's the railroad's going to build something and the city's going to maintain it or whatever it is. And it gives both parties, and this is really important, both the local road authority and the railroad have equal standing. Neither one can trump the other. They're equal. And they both have a chance independently to review that and respond back to us in writing whether they agree or disagree. And this is what's important. If either party disagrees, that action is stayed. We cannot legally go forward with it even if we want to. Even if it's the worst thing in the world that we see, we're not allowed to do it unless a hearing is held in front of an administrative law judge. So, yeah, we regulate, but we don't have the power to ignore people. So in the case where somebody objects, what happens is it doesn't like immediately go to hearing. When somebody writes an objection, we call the parties together. And by the way, before we issue a proposed order, if somebody's asked for something, we do a diagnostic out at that crossing with everybody there. If somebody wants to change something, we go out on the crossing, we look at it together, us, the road authority, and the railroad, and talk about what should be done. And that's what really helps build the proposed order. Now, sometimes we do, on our own motion, do something, but we still have talked with people about it. We don't just do it on our own. So when we put the proposed order out and somebody objects, the thing we do is we get the parties back together and we talk about what the objection is. It may be something very, very minor. It may be something very major. But we continue to talk. And sometimes, in some cases, these talks have gone on for over a year before anything is done, before we even go to a hearing. And finally, somebody will say, you know, I'm tired. I think we're just kind of going in circles. Let's set a hearing. And then we'll request a hearing. And a hearing is usually a few more months off because the hearing office has a different schedule and they do these things on their own schedule. We don't control it. And again, there's still time to talk. So, and what I've pointed out before and what's in my testimony is I look back over the last 10 years and we've issued over 700 orders that affected over 1,900 crossings. And in all of those, only 8 that were contested were ever going towards a hearing. I mean, not that somebody didn't have an issue, but were headed towards a hearing. And only 1 of the 8 actually ended up at a hearing. And in that one went not only through a hearing, but through a district court and court of appeals. I mean, it really got heard. So my point is there is a lot of time and a lot of discussion that goes on. And through all of that, we can't go forward. We can't close something. So I think people get a little confused when they hear the word proposed final order and they think that it's a done deal. It's by far not a done deal. It's not a done deal until either all the parties agree or a hearing's been held and the hearing officer tells what the judgment is. So there's a lot of due process. It's all by the Administrative Procedures Act. A lot of agencies have to go by it. We do too. Now I want to talk about this particular case. We did meet and talk with Corvallis for a long, long time about a lot of crossings in their area. And I can't second guess why somebody doesn't talk to somebody else within a particular department. I understand that, like the city councilor was saying, you know, one part of ODOT has a road plan and another part talks rail that maybe you didn't know. I mean, these things happen. I mean, they're big agencies. But I want you to know, I went back through my file and I'm here to tell you that we talked to Corvallis a lot about their crossings, a lot of about different crossings. Actually tried to offer, you know, upgrade some for closures of some, because that's usually how the federal money is spent, to upgrade one and close another. And the staff that we worked with said, no, we don't think we'll be interested. We'd need to do a traffic analysis. We don't have money for that. That's what our council would want. There was process issues. We continued to work the issue. We continued to, and finally, you know, the crossing proposed order that we issued was in June, but I actually found documentation where both in January and February we had in writing told the staff that we were considering closing these two crossings and why, and that if they felt they needed a public meeting, which is one of the things they kept talking about, that they should do that because we would want to hear that. So I just want you to know I do believe we communicated. I don't believe we always do a good job of communicating. I'm not saying that. I'm just talking about this particular case and what I could find on it. And what ultimately happened, because and they're right, these particular two crossings didn't have accidents at them. But my staff finally brought it to my attention and said, Kelly, we've got an issue with Corvallis. And Corvallis had asked to meet with me. They wrote me a letter and asked if they could meet with me. And I said, sure, this was in May. And they said, I think you better go down and see these crossings so you understand what we're talking about. Because I asked the same thing. Have there been accidents there? When I got there and saw the two crossings, we were in the car. And at one of them, the railroad track is curved, and there was, where you have to stop at the stop line before you're on the tracks, a building literally completely blocked your view. You could not see the track in any way. You would have to creep forward and be on the track to look down the track, and it's a curve. And yes, I know trains sound their horns, but you know, people don't always hear the horns. They have lots of things going on in the car. They may have their radio up, all sorts of reasons why. And so I literally did not want us to cross that crossing that day. I was scared to go across that crossing when I knew we couldn't see it. I said, you guys, I don't want to go across this crossing. And I understand that maybe the locals are used to it, but I was scared. When we went to the other crossing, it was where an apartment building was, and along the track was a very tall photinia hedge, very thick, very, very tall hedge. And you could not see the tracks again from the stop line. And again, I was scared. The building one scared me more than the hedge one, but the hedge one was bad too. And it was a thick hedge. And what happened was when we met with Corvallis staff, the engineering folks, to try to work this out, we tried, there was all kinds of drawing on the board that day when I was there. And we tried to figure out a way to signalize it, how you wouldn't have traffic backing up somewhere else. And I finally said, guys, now that I've seen this with my own eyes as administrator, I can't ignore this. I have to try to protect the public at this. I know there haven't been wrecks. I don't want there to be a wreck. So we went ahead, went forth with the proposed order, told them we were going to, and this is after we'd put it in writing a couple of times 6 months prior, and went ahead and put it. And that's when, whatever reason, other communication happened and people found out about it. I didn't intend to blindside anybody. I didn't think I was blindsiding anybody. But I did feel we had to try to act. Now, interestingly enough, once it was brought up and once people did really start talking about it beyond what had happened, guess what they discovered? The building had been built without a permit. It was actually partially on the railroad's property. And so we carved off a piece of the building, and that's how we got site there. That's how we could leave that one open. And, oh, by the way, the hedge that was giving privacy to everybody in the parking lot and the apartments, and I can understand that, I've lived in apartments, was on railroad property and got trimmed down. So you could see again. So we were able to do it. But I got to tell you, with a year and a half of discussion, we'd never gotten that far. So that's why I issued the proposed order. And so I think that the bill is well-intentioned. I think it adds a redundant step. I think there's a lot of due process and time inside the current process. And I think the record shows that even if things are contentious, and crossings often are, we do work them out. Is everybody happy all the step of the way? Heck no. It's a regulatory process, and people don't always like being regulated. I don't like being told what to do. So, you know, but we do our best. And do we always do our best? No, but we try our best. So I'll give you that, Madam Chair, and I'll stop.
Thank you. Representative Schaffler.
Well, I always do what I'm told to do. Anyway, and I'm
heard that.
Kelly, I'm not questioning what you did there at all, and I'm not questioning the railroad or the government. I guess and legislators need to learn the process too, and we need to, before we make any decisions, we need to be educated. So I guess the process, let's say I have a business or a home, and I use a crossing every day for that business or to commute,
mm-hmm.
and the closing of that process would hurt my business or make my commute, you know, painfully longer. What is the notification process for properties and people in the area? Or are they just completely dependent on their elected officials to do this negotiating for them?
Madam Chair and Representative Schaffer, it's a very good question. The answer is, the reason we notify the road authorities and the railroads is because that's the two owners of the intersection that we're talking about. And it is up to whoever it is, road authority to their constituents, railroad to whatever their needs are, to notify their constituents and to speak on their behalf. Now, there have been times, I will tell you, in certain cases where other parties have become a party. There is a process in the Administrative Procedures Act under due process to become a party. You always start with the railroad and the road authority, but in fact, certain businesses have been added to a contested case to be part of that for that very reason from time to time.
Okay, well, then, all right. Does anyone, it's not the railroad's responsibility, they're just worried about the railroad.
It's the road authority.
Does the road authority notify people in the neighborhood or not?
Madam Chair and Member Schaffler, I can't answer that. I think it's a case by case. I have no idea. But it is up to them. I don't know what their different ordinances say. I really don't. Or even what their policies are.
That's fair. Thank you.
Representative Berger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Kelly, have you ever, is the word proposed final order a statutory or regulatory? Why don't you call it proposed closure order and settle down the angst over the language?
Madam Chair and Representative Berger, that's a really good suggestion. I was thinking about that as I sat at the back, frankly, thinking, I wonder if we have to put the word final in there. I don't think so. I think we could put proposed order, and then it would look just like what it is.
Proposed closure order or something, and that would get everybody's attention, but it doesn't sound like the hammer's about to come down. If you do have a process where they can talk about it, at least indicate that you're willing to talk is my suggestion.
Madam Chair and Representative Berger, I really appreciate that. I will look into that. It was a 60-day notice.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Madam
you.
Chair.
And that's all I have signed up for this bill. So I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2417. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3248. I have
two sponsors of this bill sitting up here. Does anyone want to speak to the bill?
Am I doing the right one?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
You want me to give a quick
yes,
overview?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This measure, House Bill 3248, requires ODOT to prioritize actions altering, relocating, or eliminating a railroad grade crossing. It directs the department to provide written findings and a cost-benefit analysis of any chosen action, as well as rejected alternative actions.
Thank you. And I just to make sure, the two sponsors of the bill, do they need to speak, or
who are they?
Representative Schaffler and Representative Bailey.
I have a microphone, Madam Chair, if I need to speak.
All right.
Bailey,
given
the,
we'll let the proponents speak.
Okay. David Barenberg and Greg Jones.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm David Barenberg from the City of Portland, and with me is Greg Jones, who's the Director of the Capital and Development Program at the Portland Bureau of Transportation. I will speak very briefly and then let the person who actually knows much more of the substance of the issue say more. This bill that's before you really does two fairly simple things. The first is, reminded me of an issue with my son when he was in sixth grade when the teacher sent home a paper saying, you have the right answer, but show your work. It just asks that that the Rail Division, in making decisions on closing crossings and altering crossings, have to make findings that show the reasons why that they're doing them. And the second thing is trying to have the least intrusive remedy that gets to the safety solution, that is to look at the different options that there are before closing a railroad crossing. So those go hand in hand, having the findings and having the least intrusive solution. It's no attempt in this bill to limit the authority to do closures if they're necessary. We just would like to have more specific and open and transparent process and findings as that process moves forward. And with that, Madam Chair, if I may, I'd like to pass the microphone over to Greg.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Greg Jones with the Portland Bureau of Transportation. And I've been with Office of Transportation for almost 30 years and have been through multiple contested railroad hearings. So while it was suggested to you that there have not been very many. We have a number and two fairly recent ones. One at Northwest Balboa and Highway 30 in the Northwest Industrial Area of the City of Portland. The other most recent one was at North Ledbetter in the Rivergate Industrial Area, which connects to the Multnomah County Wapato Jail, the large employment area of Columbia Sportswear and Oregon Transfer. So major employers, major in economic development areas of the City of Portland. In both instances, ODOT Rail notified us as the road authority, and as they described, they believe it is our responsibility to notify the affected property owners. We go through a process to do that in each and every case where we have a proposed rail order. But that responsibility is transferred to the city, not ODOT. And what we have found over the past few years with these proposed orders and hearings is that we engage in a long and very expensive process to go through this, and it involves bringing our legal staff, our technical experts, hiring consultants to basically defend the positions that we've identified or are trying to support. In the two examples, I think the most recent one was out at North Ledbetter. We were building with OTIA funding and federal funding a rail crossing with the Port of Portland that crossed a line, I believe it was operated by the Burlington Northern, into this small industrial area that is now served by a cul-de-sac with a at-grade railroad crossing. That crossing serves also the Wapato Jail of Multnomah County. The issues that led to the rail crossing order arose out of the overcrossing, and ODOT Rail then added a requirement to close the existing crossing. This would lead to a very long cul-de-sac with one way in and out of this very intensive industrial area. Our arguments were that with seismic events, snow and ice events, major fire, we would only have one way in and out of the area. And what we're asking ODOT to do is when they look at the different steps to go through on a rail crossing is they look for first the most the least intrusive way of controlling the safety issue. And in both examples that I'm giving you, there was no accident history at all. The difficulty that we perceive is that ODOT Rail is looking at the rail safety issue only. We are arguing the public safety issue. So we're trying to make the argument and have not been particularly successful in this process that the life safety issues of being able to get fire and emergency vehicle access into these areas needs equal consideration with the rail safety aspects of the crossing closure. In the Balboa crossing, which was closed, in that instance, that accessed an area of tank farms and the Metro Waste Transfer Facility in Northwest Portland. 75% of the petroleum products in the state of Oregon come through that tank farm. So it's the number one priority for first response by the City Portland Fire Bureau. This closure leaves that area at the end of a very long cul-de-sac that has only one way in and out. In the event of a fire, emergency, an explosion, depending on where that event might occur, this area could have been easily isolated and we might have been unable to evacuate the area. We did reach a settlement after a long protracted process and very expensive process involving consultants and attorneys that resulted in closure but improvements that would allow emergency access across that closed grade crossing. To date, those grade crossing improvements and the cul-de-sac that was to be built have not been built by ODOT Rail. So we have a number of contentious issues that we've been struggling with ODOT Rail for a number of years. This bill, the intention of this bill, is to try to define more clearly what the process is for making the decisions that ODOT moves forward with and for documenting why they're doing it so that we're privy to the information that they're using to make those kinds of decisions. We believe that it's a fairness issue, a transparency issue, and that will actually make the process better for both parties. Thank you. Any questions?
Thank you. Questions? Representative Schaffler?
So can you specifically tell me what kind of information you're lacking currently that you do ODOT or the railroad have that you don't have?
The proposed order crossings are... do not include the technical information that they're using to make the decision. It's simply a statement of decision, a statement of who is financially responsible for making the improvements involved in the crossing, and a statement of when the actions need to take place. So the identification of what the safety issue is, accident histories, videotapes of what ODOT Rail may identify as the problem are not included in the ODOT file or crossing order.
Is it provided upon your request?
Some of the information has been provided and some has not. There's a discovery process that's involved in the ODOT Rail crossing order hearing process. It can be a very lengthy process, and we found that our response to our requests are not often received well. We don't often get all the information we ask for.
All right, one more and then I'll shut up.
All right.
So if you contest something, do they respond, do they request information from you, and do you immediately respond to them?
Discovery process requires both parties to provide that information.
Thank you.
Representative Widener, I must just tilt to the other side right now. So.
You just want me to clean up Representative Schaffler's mess every time. Thank you, Madam Chair. It's weird you bring up that crossing, because I know the crossing from doing a lot of work up in that area. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are when some of these go through, because that crossing was a very dangerous crossing. I always wondered myself, pulling off on it a few times. And you're wanting them to provide information or give alternatives rather than the closure itself at some of these? Is that what I'm gathering?
I think what we're asking for in the bill, and I assume you're talking about the Balboa crossing.
Yeah.
In that instance, that was a gated crossing. And what we were asking for is the documentation or their findings of why they considered it unsafe, and consideration of the other public safety concerns in limiting that access point. Those were the issues in that instance.
Thank you. No other questions. All right. Thank you. I have Gary Eichmann. Hopefully I got that right.
You did, in fact. Thank you. Not very many people do. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Gary Eichmann. I am president and CEO of Oregon Transfer Company. CEOs are not in great favor these days, so I've just been going back calling myself president of the company. Oregon Transfer is one of the oldest operating companies in the state of Oregon. We were originally founded in 1868 as Portland Hack and Dray Company. 1868, it's interesting because we're talking about railroads, was 1 year before the completion of the first transcontinental railroad. Our early directors included names like Failing, Corbett, Widler, and many others who have Portland streets named after them. Today, Oregon Transfer provides third-party logistics services to a blue-chip roster of companies, primarily in the fruit and grocery, and food, grocery, and beverage industries. Our service area includes Oregon, Washington, Idaho, Western Montana, and increasingly Northern California. We have over 150 employees, most of whom are Teamsters. Our largest warehouse, which is located in the Rivergate Industrial Area in North Portland, nearly had its operational efficiency and safety severely compromised by an action initiated by ODOT. A little background, I think, is in order. Oregon Transfer's most recent investment is in a 315,000-square-foot state-of-the-art distribution center located on North Ledbetter Road in Rivergate. This is an $11 million private investment project that created 40 family wage jobs. It is the Pacific Northwest Distribution Center for Unilever Corporation. Some of you may be familiar with them. They provide products like Best Food Mayonnaise and Skippy Peanut Butter and Dove Soap and Q-tips. Our investment in Rivergate dates back to 1976, when we built a nearly 200,000-square-foot building to operate for General Foods Corporation. Rivergate is a good investment, in our opinion. It's the best multimodal transportation district in the entire Pacific Northwest. It has great marine facilities at Terminal 6, excellent access to interstate highway system, is served by all the truckload and less-than-truckload carriers, is close to the international airport, and is jointly served by the BNSF and UP Railroads. This is important for me for a number of reasons. We handle somewhere north of 8,000 rail cars a year in our operation, so we're dependent on the railroad for lots of our inbound traffic. Also important is that Rivergate community has become important for third-party logistics providers. And all of these components are essential to Portland's competitiveness in regional, national, and international markets. What's been nice about being out in Rivergate is there's been ongoing improvements to transportation infrastructure over the years that has improved the efficiencies of the existing businesses and the port and has helped attract new investment and jobs. So here's the crux of the matter. ODOT issued an order to close the at-grade rail crossing on Leadbetter upon completion of the overpass that was previously described. The at-grade crossing has been the primary, the only access to the many businesses in the area. The closure of the at-grade crossing would have been a disinvestment in the industrial area and a degradation of the transportation infrastructure. The closure would have had a negative impact not only on Oregon Transfer Company, but the entire industrial neighborhood. As particularly regards Oregon Transfer, it would have made it nearly impossible to safely access our property given its location and the increased traffic patterns. This could have ultimately led to a loss of business and of jobs. But given the severity of the situation, none of the affected property owners had any standing in the proceedings. I'm appalled that an affected landowner does not have any standing to contest the proposed railroad crossing action taken by ODOT. The only parties to the proceeding are ODOT, the railroad, and the road authority if it's not ODOT. Oregon Transfer and the other landowners had economic and safety concerns about the proposed closure. It wasn't until the ODOT director himself interceded and participated in a mediation proceeding in which we were in fact included, was our point of view heard. The current system, in my opinion, is flawed. ODOT is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. There are no processes in place for affected parties to be heard. One would hope that when the affected property owners, the City of Portland, the City Fire Department, Multnomah County, and the Port of Portland, that all had issues and objected to the closing, that there was not a procedure short of mediation to deal with those issues. So I'm asking for your support of House Bill 3248 to ensure that in the future, ODOT Rail has meaningful standards when considering altering or closing at-grade crossings. The old-fashioned concepts of public safety, necessity, and convenience, and general welfare come to mind. I believe that the citizens of Oregon who are providing jobs in a down economy deserve better treatment. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Shoffman.
Well, let's see if I can ask one question this session, Madam Chair, without Representative Widener chiming in on and commenting on it. sir, what was the, sorry you had to be here for that one. When did you find out about this potential final order, and how did that process shake out for you? Because it's exactly the scenario, which I didn't even know about.
The proposed final order had already been issued, and it was brought to my attention by the Port of Portland. Mm-hmm.
And it did not, may I?
Yes.
And it did not, thank you. It did not, they did not end up closing it because of your concerns?
No. Through two mediations, we ended up working out a deal.
Uh-huh.
In which case it is not going to be closed.
Oh, very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I gave him a shot. I don't see him raising his hand.
Madam Chair, do you let Representative Shoffler know that I love him?
I love you more, Representative.
Thank you. Terry Finn. And... do you have more to add, do you think? Yes. Cindy Roberts and David Enser. Did he leave? Oh, no, he's still back there. You don't have to come up if you don't have more to add, but you're welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, I'm Terry Finn, representing Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad, and here to, I think, more stringently oppose this bill, 3248. You know, this bill, instead of laying out the possible alternatives for closure, would lay out a new priority and put the idea of closure at the very lowest or the last resort priority of anything. and also institute a cost-benefit analysis that would only add to the expense of the whole process, something that presumably ODOT and other parties would have to bear, including the railroad. And I might add, in response to one of the other speaker's comments, who said that he was correct in saying that there's a community perspective, there's a railroad perspective, there's an ODOT regulatory perspective. But many times what seems to be the most intrusive to the community is the least safe alternative. I think Representative Widener, not to open wounds here, but Representative Widener already noted the perceived danger of the Balboa Street crossing, which it was. We're very interested in doubling our trackage down in this industrial area to serve Cascade Grain and many other rail-served businesses who were not at the mediation table that the previous speaker described. And that makes these crossings all more dangerous when you have two tracks and two trains possibly operating. We were very interested in closure in this case, but as a previous speaker noticed, we went to mediation. We worked out a deal. Both sides gained some. Both sides gave up some, and it came out an acceptable conclusion. But this bill would make it far more expensive, I think, to provide safety measures, including closure, if that was what was determined, for dangerous rail crossings. And from the railroad's perspective, we are most interested in a process that is reliable, that has some surety to it, that we can invest in, if you will, and that has a straightforward application process. We apply for these just like public agencies do, just like ODOT itself does. So I really urge the committee to consider strongly and hopefully not move this bill ahead. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Widener, did you want to ask your question now? Or
it can wait till they all three finish, okay, as long as I get to go first for once.
Okay. I have you on the list.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Cindy Robert for Union Pacific Railroad, and the conversation about this bill from the proponents pretty much focused on the notification and how that works. I want to just assure you that the problem we have with House Bill 3248 is that it sets forth that the department shall prioritize actions. It sets that in the bill and asks ODOT to favor signalization over the closure of a crossing, which is actually advocating for the least safe option for citizens. According to the Federal Highway Administration's Railroad Highway Grade Crossing Handbook, which we all use, quote, the first alternative that should be always be considered is elimination.
Thank you. And do more.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, name is David Anzer. We, Portland Western, is also opposed to this bill, and we strongly urge you to vote no against it. These crossings, we want to see that the closure is not the last resort. We want to see that, leave that up to ODOT and to the members of the Road Authority and to the railroad to work it out.
All right. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Probably any one of the three of you can answer this if you've dealt with it at all. I've actually been involved with safety quite a bit in plants, mainly pulp and paper. And one of the things we always looked at, and it's something I'm hoping we're taking the approach, because I heard testimony up here today where they're saying, you know, they want to see if the accidents are there or have happened. When I would see my guy go up on a ladder and not tie off working on something, I didn't wait for him to fall to ride him up. I rode him up beforehand. And I'm wondering if you take that same approach with this, rather than waiting for an accident to occur, see that it is a hazard and then address it at that point.
If I may, Madam Chair, Representative Widener, our company, and I know I'm sure Union Pacific and PNW Railroad, we have statistic upon statistics of the thousands of crossings that we have in our system. We know that in many cases in a populated area, the slower the train goes, the more likely an accident is to happen. one of the reasons that you seem to have a process that tries to deal with at-grade crossings and tries to make them more safe rather than telling the railroad to slow down is because a moving train simply can't stop. So in some sense, it's really never the train's fault. It just keeps going. So you have to regulate. You have to regulate the approaches to this very important right of way, and that's what closure procedure is all about. As I mentioned in earlier testimony, we have a whole team since the year 2000. We've closed 4,000 crossings in our system, and we're aiming to do more. In the case of I think Ledbetter Avenue, I have a little problem here with thinking about. The only access was once an at-grade crossing into this industrial area. Now the state, with the money that you've helped approve, is going to build a safe, earthquake-proof grade separation a half mile away from this at-grade crossing. And to me, that industrial area will be better served than it ever was previously. Now, I'm not denying what I think the person from Oregon Trucking or transport said about maybe some difficulty in accessing their facility right there. But in general, that industrial area is getting a better access than it ever had before. But we are also going to keep a half mile away an at-grade crossing that at least until we went through the mediation process, our railroad looked as being unsafe.
Madam Chair, if I might just add for Representative Widener's benefit on the safety issue, all of the railroads nationally have been involved in a program called Operation Lifesaver. We spent hundreds of thousands of dollars and lots of man hours going around and not only educating ourselves, but educating communities. We focused on new drivers in areas so that they better understand how rail crossings work and how rail works and how to make sure that you're safe at a crossing. So preventing beforehand is a big deal to us.
Thank you. I don't see any other questions. All right. Thank you. Kelly Taylor.
Again, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Kelly Taylor with the Rail Division. I want to touch on a few things. Some of my testimony is the same that's written down, so I'm not going to go through that because we've already talked about the process. I want to talk about some of the specifics that were brought up. The reason that you and your predecessors that served in this body passed the laws about crossing regulations was about public safety. It's not rail safety. It's safety around railroads, but it's about public safety because when there's a collision at a crossing, it's not the train or the engineer that's harmed. It's the motorist, the bicyclist, or pedestrian that's harmed, and usually fatally. There's no such thing as being clipped by a train. So we take that very seriously, and in statute it talks about that the policy of the state is to protect the public at crossings and to eliminate at-grade crossings wherever possible, because we all know that an at-grade crossing, you can make it safer, but you can't make it safe. Not as safe as separated or closure. And so, but you can't always do that. There are times when you have to have an at-grade crossing, and there are 2,500 of them about in the state. Interestingly enough, Federal Railroad Administration is considering starting to regulate private crossings as well because of the danger. So that will even double it. But for right now, it's public crossings, 2,500. Our concern with this bill is what's been mentioned. It does take the least protection and make it the first priority that we would have to use, and then takes the most protection and makes it the lowest priority. It's backwards to us if you're trying to protect the public. And, you know, I understand the economic impact and people would like, you know, to do the least cost, least intrusive things, and I'm there too. But frankly, as I was thinking about this bill the other night, it kind of reminded me of that one commercial you see on TV about the credit card where they're going to do different things and they say, you know, the price is such and such, you know. And so to me it was like, okay, the price of a stop sign, a couple of $100. The price of crossing gates, probably $500,000. The price of closure, probably not that much. But the price of making sure somebody's mom and dad got home that night, priceless. And so I just don't know how I do an economic impact statement that says that we shouldn't protect people to make sure they get home at night or their teen. And I will tell you that the laws that you have right now, this law, if it went in, would actually conflict with some of the other laws that already exist on the book. So there would be this close it, don't close it thing going on. What you have on the books is working. One of our department's key performance measures that the legislature adopted is crossing incidents. And I report on it at Ways and Means, and I'll be doing it next week when I'm in front of the Ways and Means panel. I know some of y'all are on there. The crossing incidents continue to go down each year in spite of the fact that our population goes up, rail traffic has gone up, and car registrations and cars have gone up. So something's working. We're doing the right stuff with what you put in front of us. Again, crossing issues can be contentious. I want to mention that when I said 8 cases were contested and headed for hearing, that's the truth, and only one actually made it to a hearing. The two that Portland was talking about were 2 of the 8 that were contested but did not go to hearings. We worked them out without going to a hearing. So Balboa was one of the ones that I mentioned that took over a year of discussion. I mean, it was a long time of discussion, maybe even close to 2 years. I mean, it went on and on and on when finally they just said, time out, let's just go to a hearing. We videotaped, and so did the railroad, several days' worth of crossings there, and it was very scary what was going on there with the hazmat trucks that weren't supposed to be going over the tracks going there. And it was a dangerous crossing. And so it was finally, through the negotiations and talk, like I mentioned, issued that proposed order, stays the action, talk, finally worked it out. The improvements, the gated emergency, what happened is that there was an at grade. There was a separated that was already existed, so we had an at grade and a separated to access. We also had another one that had been closed years ago that had an emergency gate on it. So there was even for the fire department to be able to get into if need be. And that's what we ended up doing at Balboa, was putting up an emergency gate, which, by the way, we had suggested early on that we would do. Same thing with Ledbetter. We had suggested we would do that early on. So it wasn't that we were trying to keep access or drive down property values. We're trying to follow what's been working and trying to make it safe. And if you're going to do, it's like Burlington Northern said, if you're going to spend $11 million to separate an at grade or to make a separation to make a really, really safe access point, then you would close the at grade. I mean, that's typically what you did. Now, we didn't do that in Ledbetter. We chose to leave it open and to try to make it safe. But at Balboa, we closed it. Now, the improvement that hasn't been done yet is a cul-de-sac on the property. And it's simply a matter of the design. The design that was proposed to us is $750,000, and we believe we could do one for about $250,000, save $500,000, since we're the ones paying for it. That was part of the agreement. And so we've submitted a less expensive design that we think will suit just fine, and we're waiting to hear back on that. So that's what's left. But we did do that. I am concerned about this bill. I think this bill takes the policy completely in the wrong direction, but it's your choice to make, and I'll implement whatever you choose. Again, I think that what we're doing is successful, and I think that the parties on the Ledbetter case, there were meetings with property owners there. I did not arrange those meetings. I was invited to them. But I know that the port had a lot of the property owners there. I met with them. I don't know why this particular company didn't know of the meeting and didn't come. It was held months ahead of before we ever did a proposed order. We'd been talking with the port and everything on Ledbetter for a long time as they were working on the Ramsey Yard. So, and we'd said all along, when you build the one, you close the other. Now, so I just want to say I believe the system is working. I don't believe there's something broke. I think people do get frustrated, like I mentioned before. And I will always try to improve, and my department will always try to improve and do something better, but I do think it's working. I think that it's serving the public, and that's what it's for. It's not rail safety. It's safety around rail for the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Benz.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair.
Someone else?
So just to understand this correctly, there are two authorities, the railroad and the road authority. And the idea, those are the only two that have standing in the process at this point.
Madam Chair and Representative Benz, initially, and as it becomes, when it becomes a contested case, when somebody objects, at that point, others can file a petition with us to become a party, and several of them did in this case.
Okay. And as far as notice goes, that initial notice is simply sent to the road authority and the railroad.
Madam Chair and Representative Vince, that's correct. In this particular case, we also added the Port of Portland because it was their particular project.
One final question.
Well, yes.
So if we wanted to do something, if we were to expand that notice requirement or explain to the road authority that it had to give notice upon receipt of your notice to a certain number of other people, is that a method that would create greater difficulty in your mind?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Vince, I know it would be difficult for me to try to figure out who all to send notices to because I don't necessarily know all of it, who might be interested.
Madam Chair, that's why I suggested we simply impose that obligation upon the road authority, not you.
Madam Chair and Representative Vance, that would be their constituents, yes.
Correct. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I add one more thing? I just wanted to say on the record, this particular bill, we have not finished the fiscal, but we believe it is very significant. I would not have the resources with the amount of crossings that we're talking affected, the amount of work that would take. I do not have the resources. I would need some additional positions. I think it would be a significant fiscal.
Thank you. Okay. I'm not seeing anybody else. And with that, thank you. And I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 3248. And committee, we are adjourned. Have a good weekend.